Chapter 32. Archive. Dark Knight 9 of year 3350. A somber melody sounds. The entire crew of the ship is lined up. Eight warriors carry the deceased through the crowd on a repurposed sleeping beam. Gronolf, who is standing in the front row, recognizes the typical marks of frostbite on the skin. This is already the third victim of a series of events the superiors stubbornly call accidents, even though nobody believes that. Supposedly, as the electronic log kept by the omniscient stated, the deceased, in each case, opened the connection to a sealed, airless chamber. The records are clear and allow for no other interpretations. But why should three young warriors deliberately kill themselves? The knowledge scientist checked the log file and could not find any manipulation. Accordingly, this is the official version of the story. Gronolf does not know what their superiors think about this, but for him, the case is clear. The omniscience has murdered these warriors. He has to admit, though, that his theory has a pretty obvious flaw. Nobody knows the reason for the killing. The three victims were not important. Why should the omniscience run the risk of maybe getting caught? It did not achieve anything through these so-called accidents it could not also have achieved by different means. The only motive Gronolf can come up with is pure bloodlust. Yet that is unimaginable. The omniscience is not a normal being. It should be far above such primitive instincts. The knowledge scientists stress that as well. Accordingly, the leadership currently refrains from moving against the omniscience. The question is, what good would it do anyway? They're going to need the omniscience at least until the majestic draft has reached its destination. The superiors know that, as does the omniscience. Gronolf is therefore glad this moment will arrive soon, though he simultaneously feels a vague sense of dread. The musicians play another song. The fact that they are performing here today is an enormous concession by the leadership. The first performance by this grandiose quartet was supposed to have happened after their arrival, to celebrate the successful great jump. Now, however, the superiors think it necessary to strengthen the crew's morale. Everyone is listening in awe. Gronolf is kneading his hands because the melodies are so moving. It must have been difficult for those four to refrain from presenting their art for so long. A high-ranking officer steps up to him.
Please appear in Sector 1 in half a bubble period.
Understood.
Gronolf briefly bends his knees to express respect. Sector 1. That is the area where the leadership lives and works. One has to pass numerous checkpoints in order to enter it. He'd better start now.
Too bad I have to leave the music, he thinks. I won't hear that musical quartet again for quite some time.
On the way, he is stopped by Walkmere, who suddenly steps out of a side corridor, as if he'd been waiting for him.
Where are you going in such a hurry?
He asks.
Sector 1.
Oh, what an honor.
What do you want, Walkmere?
Gronolf shakes his knees impatiently.
I heard something you might be interested in.
Of course, Walkmere lives up to his reputation, he thinks.
And what might that be?
If you're interested, come to Sector 132 after your shift.
Why should I?
That's your decision, but I have the feeling you are going to be there.
Walkmere places both touch hands on the pit of his stomach, a sign of deference.
The old bootlicker.
Gronolf hates being so obviously manipulated, yet Walkmere is probably right. But first, he has to reach Sector 1. At the entrance of the leadership sector, he first has to hand over his weapon and then slowly walk through a metal detector. The last step is a brain scan. Supposedly, the intelligence service can tell from activity patterns in his thinking layers whether he has rebellious thoughts. Gronolf doesn't really believe that. It probably is just meant to have a deterrent effect. The officer on duty asks him to sit in a special chair. Then Gronolf imagines in great detail how he would slaughter the leadership with his weapon.
Everything is fine,
the officer says after one-tenth of a bubble period, thanking him for his cooperation. Gronolf is amused, but refuses to show it. Of course, he realizes his tests offer no final proof, as the technology might be able to detect manipulated thoughts. Unfortunately, he does not have any acquaintances working for the intelligence service. Gronolf thinks about the members of his plex, but none of them have pursued that career, at least not to his knowledge. The intelligence service developed a long time ago, during conflicts among Grosnops, and even though it officially has no enemies to spy on, it has managed to avoid being abolished. At the end of the checkpoint, a young female is waiting for him. Gronov feels how the arousal nodes distributed across his body pulsate at her sight. He has not seen a female for so long that he can't quite control himself. Actually, females are not allowed to serve in the fleet. However, there are rumors spreading about an entire sector of the ship inhabited solely by females, with whose help the colonization of the planet would become possible. He always thought this was just soldiers' wistful dreams.
I am Mornaka, the daughter of Mornak, she says. You seem surprised?
He has to think about what he should say.
I knew, of course, that the leadership group has male and female members. And the rules of the dual son indeed require an equal distribution of all positions.
After all, father son and mother son are equals in the sky. The fact that only male representatives of the leadership show themselves in other sectors seems reasonable to him, as it avoids confusing the warrior's senses.
I will take you to the meeting, Mornaka says, turning around and walking ahead.
Gronolf follows her. She is an arm's length taller than he is. He particularly notices her wide, swaying hips. They protect the egg chamber, in which the female organism prepares the eggs before laying them. Mornaka's skin is still so smooth and light green that she cannot have laid eggs yet.
What is this all about? He asks,
less out of curiosity and more to hear her voice.
I don't know, and even if I did, it would be inappropriate for me to tell you.
What is your function?
I'm a learner. If I don't embarrass myself, I will become part of the leadership group after the landing on Single Sun.
That is a great honor for a young female. This means Mornaka must have been one of the best of her plex.
And how is it going?
Quite well, I think.
Mornaka closes the lid of her rear eye and reopens it while saying these words in order to demonstrate her modesty.
More than well, I bet, Gronolf says.
This was almost a crude pickup attempt, so he softens its effect by briefly closing his front eye. Who knows what her father might do to him otherwise? Mornak does not know his name, though, because except for his father, Gronolf has no connections to the leadership group.
We are here, Mornaka says,
pointing to an inconspicuous door with a right touch arm. There's no lettering on the door. Gronolf stops for a moment.
You have to speak your name, she says.
Of course he knows that. He just wanted to take a quick breath. He hopes Mornaka will not consider him stupid and hot-headed, as many warriors are. He wants to tell her that, but she has already disappeared, as if she had never existed.
Too bad, he thinks.
Gronolf Carrion Tooth.
The door opens immediately. Behind it is a spacious hall, which is surprisingly empty. Gronolf enters it. There is a pleasant smell of fish. On the right side of the room, he sees a long table with a large number of chairs around it. One set, he estimates, meaning 7 times 7. Most of them are occupied. Somebody stands next to the table and waves at him. He starts moving with measured steps. The atmosphere in this hall is grand, and he fears that his mere presence might destroy it.
Gronolf Carrion Tooth,
says the Grosnop who waved him over, partially to him and partially to the others. It is an older female. She does not offer any further explanation besides his name. This is an incredible honor, and Gronolf feels his back becoming cold with awe.
Just sit down, Gronolf.
This is his father's voice. He cannot see him because a female next to him blocks the view of his body, but it is obviously him. One chair turns by itself to indicate it is unoccupied and meant for him. Gronolf's blood is pumping fast as if he were about to enter a battle. What do they want from him here? For a moment there is silence. Then Gronolf hears a scratching noise. His father gets up and starts walking around the long table, as a speaker properly should.
The leadership circle, Gronolf Carrion Tooth, has been worried for a while, his father states.
Whenever he passes someone in a chair, he winks at the person with his side eye.
The omniscience, how can I say this, no longer cooperates with us the way we would want it to. While we can still send it our commands, it often finds reasons for not implementing them. We cannot accuse it of insubordination, because the omniscience bases these reasons on supreme rules which we are also subject to. Its arguments are so clever that even our best knowledge scientists have nothing to oppose them with.
Gronolf is surprised, not by the contents of the speech, as even common soldiers realize by now that the omniscience likes to use these supreme rules as an excuse. What surprises, or rather, shocks him, is that the leadership group seems to have no strategy to fight this. Why else would they have invited him?
You are probably wondering what you have to do with this, and what this invitation is all about,
his father adds promptly.
The knowledge scientists have extrapolated that the Omniscience might gain complete control of the ship in the near future. These recent events indicate that it does not regard us as its masters, but rather as a means to an end, or even a burden.
Gronolf is annoyed. Not even his father dares to call these events what they really are, sneaky murders of crew members. He will have to try to hide his anger. His father briefly stops, makes a 180-degree turn, and walks in the opposite direction.
We have to be prepared for this,
he says.
There is a mechanism, an emergency switch we can use to remove functions from the Omniscience. That way we can cut off all its exterior connections. Then it has no influence on the ship anymore, and is only responsible for the engine.
That would be our death, Gronolf thinks. Without the Omniscience, we will hardly reach Single Sun.
The emergency switch is in a chamber. We have to occupy that chamber so we can use the emergency switch once we arrive in the system of Single Sun. We cannot send a company, and nobody from the leadership group should participate. That is why we thought of you. You are, if you excuse the evaluation, a simple crew member, but you are also the best of your plex, and of course, my son. So you enjoy our full trust.
Won't I need certain authorizations to get into control areas?
His father stops. Numerous eyes watch Gronolf, who dared to say something without being asked.
Of course you will need authorizations to fulfill this task. However, the Omniscience would notice it if we grant them to you now. Therefore, the learner Murnaka will accompany you. Both of you will occupy the security chamber, thus enabling us to deactivate the Omniscience. You already met Murnaka. During the last few weeks, we gradually transferred all authorizations to her. This fits the story that she eventually will join the leadership circle. We are hoping the two of you are still unimportant enough that the Omniscience will ignore you.
We are hoping?
Yes, Gronolf. Nothing is certain. However, the Omniscience is not really omniscient. It has to distribute its resources, just as we do, and this means it is not aware of the many actions performed by individual crew members. Naturally, you will attract its attention once you approach the control area. By that time, you will have to expect countermeasures. You will definitely need vacuum equipment, weapons, and tools.
I understand. Task accepted, Gronolf says.
I would suggest you two get a good night's sleep, and then start with the implementation,
his father says.
Once you are on the way, we can no longer communicate. While this room is bug-proof, you two will be on your own out there.
Thanks. May I leave?
Just a moment.
A Grosnop general gets up at the end of the table. The man looks ancient, and his voice is hoarse.
I am Murnak, he says. I will kill you if you take liberties with my daughter.
Gronolf accepts this statement without showing any emotion, and none of those present say anything. It is the duty of a father to find the best sperm donor for his daughter. And who would be more suitable than the warrior who defeats the father in an honest fight? If he should actually lose against the old man, the shame of that defeat would be with him forever. Therefore, it is only right that he should lose his life if he loses the fight. If he wins, everyone expects him to show mercy to the father of his future wife. That's how life has always been on the world of the Double Sun.